It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I am Dave Richmond with my brothers from a different mother. Mothers, that would be Kyle from the Greens Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, Dave? How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing fabulous. I am doing great. Happy New Year, Kyle. 2020.
Happy New Year, Dave. Yes, 2020. It's finally, after all these years, I can see 2020.
Exactly. I knew there would be some joke, and I was making sure it was not vision on my part. So I had a lot of people already. No, I was going to say I've had a lot of people already make vision jokes, not about you, but just vision jokes in general.
That's good. Glad they weren't specifically about me.
No, just 2020. They were just keeps 2020. We'll be able to see clearer than your vision. And I was like, and they were like, I was joking. I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean I have to laugh. Yeah. Clear vision, clear. I was like, I got it. I understand the joke. It just wasn't funny. Anyway, Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Glad y'all are. That's what it's been a rainy start to the new year. That's for sure.
No doubt about it. By the way, folks, Bubba's looking for a brand new vehicle. We're trying to tell him to get a truck. So
yeah,
it's
I'm
the
actually, you know,
truck
he,
objective.
He didn't like the prices of full size trucks, and you know they got great rebates and incentives right now on the 2019 Rangers because they made too damn many of them. And it's a sexy ass midsize truck, and I'm trying to talk him in that direction. Bubba, I just sent you a link to Car Gurus, by the way. Check that one out.
By the way, Kyle, I have an idea.
Since
whatever that guy is in whatever that city in Florida used to say about you being a T-shirt maker, if that doesn't work out, you could always – I really am sincere when I say this. I really believe you should be a car salesman.
Well, perhaps. But, you know, I'm a minimum wage T-shirt maker, and, you know, that's my passion, to be a minimum wage T-shirt maker. Owen in Tampa?
Exactly. He's so funny.
Yeah, the guy who tries to be funny but can't be. You know, I don't try to be funny. I just am funny, mother truckers. So, you know, if you try to be funny, if you try to be funny, you ain't funny.
Hey, now, Dave, since I'm in the market, obviously it's not right here in my area, but maybe I need to go down and visit our buddy Chad Triplett, general sales manager at Wilkinson Chevrolet Cadillac Buick GMC. That's what obviously Chad played baseball.
Now, you're putting him on the spot now.
Yeah, back in the, I guess, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. And you think he can cut you a good deal on the Silverado? And Bubba, if your heart is set on a GMC product, you know, they do make the Colorado and the Canyon.
That's right. Yeah, the Colorado, I know.
Yeah, I guess I need to take a trip down to Sanford to see if Chad can hook me up.
Yeah.
Chad, if you're listening, charge
Bubba
double.
Pirates helping Pirates, Chad.
$700 a month, Chad. He can afford it. He's looking for $700 a month for 7 years. That's a joke.
If he wanted $700 a month, anybody be able to hook him up with him. Yeah, come on in.
if that kind of deal was good for me, I would be already driving a new truck right now.
Yeah, he turned out a pretty good deal yesterday.
All right, Bubba's going to get a new vehicle, a new truck in 2020, and me, a
I
new
hope
truck
so,
in
man.
2021.
Bubba's scared me when he's saying he may look at other things besides trucks because, you know, I wouldn't be worried if I thought Bubba was, when he said other things besides trucks, if he was talking about a Challenger or a Charger.
Now guys, I'm a man of style. I want a purple and gold El Camino.
Hey, that's classic,
buddy. It's the finest automobile ever made.
Classic. Hey, how about a purple and gold Nova? That'd be pretty badass.
Yes, that's awesome. How about here's one for you, Kyle.
Yeah.
Do you think he could rock the the purple and gold Cabriolet?
Wow, Cabriolet. How about we go 80s? How about we go 80s cool and get a purple and gold Firebird?
Oh man, there you go. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, those were cool when being a teenager and before there was a tween.
Maybe a Trans Am, maybe a purple and gold Trans Am.
Yeah, that would be that. Yeah, I can
go
with that. That would be really cool. So, yeah,
just the car objective.
Well, we can leave the gold off. A purple and black Trans Am would be sweet.
I never. And black. Yeah, I could see the black trim.
Yeah.
All right, let's go there. All right, let's talk. Speaking of the Pirates, let's go ahead and move on because. For those who don't know, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm telling you, he misses calling as a car salesman. And if you're looking for a great guy, and I mean this sincerely, and a funny guy,
I didn't
a guy
know
that could sell his butt off, and that would be Kyle from LaGrange.
I was looking for a job.
Get Kyle from LaGrange. I'm telling you, you can just do it. You can
no
do meet and greets.
You're
doing meet and greets.
Yeah.
You can act, and then what you can do? I got it.
I was kind of holding out for
sell
Bubba
a truck.
Bubba
can be the first person you sell a vehicle to.
What I was planning on doing, actually, Bob or Dave, if we're going to talk about changing professions from a minimum wage T-shirt maker, I was actually going to lose weight. I was actually going to lose weight, start lifting weights, get in incredible shape, and become a male gigolo. But you know.
We'll ask Jessica. She's like, take my husband, please. Anyway, we're off to a great start, folks. We are the Sports Objective. You
people
have not
are turning
heard.
Off
season.
Their computers left and right.
Exactly. They're turning. They're like, God, these guys don't ever learn. They're in a new year. They still haven't learned. They're terrible. But anyway, 2020's here. Very excited about it. Seriously. Very excited about all
you
the
got
sports.
Anything interesting for New Year's Eve? Bubba, did you do anything for New Year's Eve?
I did not. I brought 2020 in style, just at home on the couch with a sleeping wife and children.
All right. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, the kids, we actually, it was funny because I was getting them ready for it, and they got excited about the countdown.
Yeah.
So in the 11 o'clock hour, I'm pumping them up. They're like, oh, my God, Daddy, that's so cool. Can we do it again? 10, they do the countdown, right? One, Happy New Year. I told them about it, and they were so excited. I fell asleep about 11:40. I didn't even make midnight. I'm normally the guy that I normally could stay up. I felt so bad, and I was so angry on New Year's Day. I was like, are you kidding me? I missed the ball dropping? So that's like I'm a nerd. When I love to like see the New Year come in. I felt so bad. I felt so cheated. But anyway, and then Kyle got mad at me because Bubba and I didn't eat any black-eyed peas on New Year's Day. So
yeah, now what the hell
really
is up with y'all? I mean, y'all don't eat black-eyed peas on New Year's Day.
I normally do, but my luck has been so good lately.
I don't know mad at you is the right word, but I was concerned about your North Carolina heritage not eating black-eyed peas on New Year's Day. I don't know about both of y'all. You got Bubba considering getting something besides a truck, maybe a nice sedan. And neither one of you are eating black-eyed peas on New Year's Day. I'm starting to wonder about you both.
All right. Well, we'll have to go to Lowe's or we'll have to go somewhere to get I guess
yeah.
Kyle is taking away our man card. That's what he's saying,
yeah.
Bubba.
The fairy joke.
Anyway, hey, let's talk sports. There are a lot of topics to talk about. I want to start out, guys, because I was not around in 1956, but Don Larson passed away a couple days ago, 90 years old, and you wonder why that's significant. Well, for those that don't know, he's the only one to ever throw a perfect game in a World Series game, October 1956, and actually that was a really big game. I think the series was tied 2-2. The Brooklyn Dodgers, my Uncle Roger Craig, was on that team, and so it has a family significance because obviously Brooklyn was very good. They'd won the previous year. He threw a white foul, perfect game, and it turned the series where the Yankees win in 1956 and go on win, and definitely one of the most iconic games in the history of the sport. And we're going to miss, obviously, him. Had a great life, obviously, being 90, but hard to believe that a guy actually put on there his career. That was probably, like, the highlight of his career, his overall ERA and different things.
I would think throwing a perfect game in the World Series would be the highlight of his career, yeah.
Yeah, I was
saying overall he didn't have the career like people think because he had the perfect game is my point.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, Dave. Obviously, like Kyle said, that would be the highlight of your career. That goes without saying. But I was expecting him to have a better overall record for his career. I want to say he was something like 81-91. He did, however, have a pretty good ERA. He had an ERA
3.56.
Yeah, it was in the low to mid threes, which is respectable.
Not bad,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that was,
when those
that was
days, weren't ERAs lower anyway?
Typically, because what happened back then, I mean, I think one time my dad was telling me that time, I think there may have been like 12 teams. And that's the debate we were talking about with Johnny Nairn with the expansion is that they've expanded so much. When you're going to go from 12 back then to soon it's going to be by the end of this decade, we're going to have 32 teams. So the talent level is some people argue would be watered down, and ERAs are going to go up because the pitching is just not there compared to back then, where you get the creme de la creme because there's not that many pitchers when there's only like 12 teams. So just I wasn't back there. It's way, way, way before my time, but very cool thing. One of the best moments in the history of baseball for sure. Hey, how about my Washington Redskins?
Dave, I did, before you talk about the Redskins, I had that creme de la creme at a French restaurant one time. It's delicious.
Wow. Ron Rivera, who was fired by the Panthers, and I love the Panthers with our good friend Mick Mixon. Why in the world they got rid of Ron Rivera, I don't know. The team actually imploded the last four games after he was fired. But anyway, the Washington Redskins, known for their dysfunction, known for their infighting, known for every way that you can screw up a decision, they actually got it right this time. What a great hire. And by the way, Jack Del Rio was his first hire, the defensive coordinator. Great guy, a great coach, a defensive coach, has one of the best, you know, defenses as far as if you look at his time in the league, their defense, his defenses always are top five kind of defenses. So good news there for the Redskins. Very happy about that. If you've been suffering for many years, then you'll know that that was I think it was a great move. And it may not be the, for some people, the sexy hire that maybe people want, but I think it was a sensible one. And the, somebody said, a media person said, which was true, it was the right hire for right now. And I think that was a good point for an organization that, I mean, this is hard to believe, guys. You want to talk about misery for the Pirates? We've had five straight losing seasons, right? And that's miserable, right? And not something we're used to. Try only three, count them, three playoff wins since 1993. Just think about that. That's amazing. 20 quarterbacks in the last 20 years. I forgot how many coaches it is now with under Dan Snyder, but hopefully they can turn things around in D.C. and move around. But what did you think, you guys think about that hire?
I didn't care.
I know you're not a pro guy, but.
No, I guess it's a good hire. I mean, Ron Rivera's a good coach. It's a solid hire. I'm kind of, my first reaction was, eh. But, I mean, I look at his overall record. He did it, you know, the Panthers made the playoffs most years.
And a Super Bowl appearance.
Yeah, and a Super, yeah. So, it's probably a solid hire.
My reaction was, first of all, I mean, just like you said, with a lot of the front office stuff they've had going on there, I know Bruce Allen's gone, and then you had, of course, Snyder. I heard an interesting interview Patrick Johnson on 94.3 had on Paul Troughs, and Paul's doing some analyst work for the Redskins, and they had an interesting conversation just talking. They had some quotes from Rivera, and Rivera was just saying that the reason that he committed to the Redskins is because after having some in-depth conversations with Daniel Snyder is committed to not operating the way he is in the past, and that's easy to say. We'll see if it holds true. If not, then I don't see this lasting too long. But essentially what he said was that he'd taken a look at the Patriots, the Seahawks, and some other organizations.
Steelers,
and that had taken a coach-centered approach. And so, in other words, not meddling. What an interesting concept.
Exactly.
But anyway, Ron Rivera, I think, is an excellent hire. And if Daniel Snyder can stick to his word and approach there, I think it could be successful for sure. You take a look at what he did in his 9 years with the Panthers. I think 76-63-1, something like that.
Yeah.
And but that 2013 to 2015, where he won three straight NFC South Division titles, and then in 15, obviously going 17-2 and falling just shy of the Super Bowl. Super Bowl championship. Cause,
that's right. They made it there, but they got demolished by Peyton Manning and the Broncos. There was a Super Bowl 50. But how about this, guys? More recent news is Jason Garrett gets fired by the Cowboys. Jerry Jones, speaking of another great owner that knows how to meddle, Jerry Jones sees everything. He's your general manager. He's your coach. He doesn't even need to hire a coach. He needs to be the coach. But anyway, we need to get Robert Jones on to see what he thinks. I think that would be great, and we need to have him on.
That's Jerry Jones' son, right?
What's that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure Robert. You know Robert that idea. Robert still looks great. Robert looks great still. He looks like he still can play. He looks like he kicked your butt there, Kyle.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like those, for those of you the older, know those Miller Lite commercials back in the day, like you can crush mm-hmm. cans and everything.
I was talking about a beer commercial. You guys remember from a few years ago, I don't know if it was Miller or Budweiser, it was going, "Real Man of Genius."
Oh, yeah, that was Budweiser.
I love those commercials.
They were great. They were great.
Yeah, they were.
You need to bring those back.
Take that, Kyle from LaGrange Barber.
Hey, guys, kind of a funny story about those commercials. Kyle, do you remember the one, Too Much Cologne Wear?
No, I like it already.
I'm pretty sure there was one Too Much Cologne Wear, and that's what it was either there was one, and I told my dad that commercial was talking about him, or I said that there needed to be one Too Much Cologne Wear about him.
You can smell you from the other room!
Yeah.
You sprayed it everywhere!
I'd forgotten all about that. Well, the things you learn and the things you forget and they brought up on the Sports Objective, you never, that's why people listen to us. Is,
so does Gary like to smell good for the ladies, Bubba?
Apparently.
All right.
Sounds good. He's my kind of guy.
What is his cologne of choice?
To be honest with you, I'm not even sure now. He got some for Christmas, and I looked at it. I don't recall what it was.
Bruce?
Come on.
No. No.
Is
Old Spice.
I do remember back in the day, he and I laughing at those Brute commercials because there was a guy, you know, he had that hair hanging down on both sides of his face, like down past his cheekbones.
What color was the cologne, Bubba? Do you remember? That might help me identify.
My dad said that haircut, it made it, it looked like he had a butt on his head. But
wow. Your dad. By the way, Kyle.
What color was the bottle?
Yeah, what color was the bottle or the cologne? If it was a clear bottle.
Let's see. I want to say the bottle was some shade of blue, but I may be mistaken.
Is it a Nautica cologne? I wear a Nautica cologne. Nautica blue.
No, it was not. I would have remembered if it was Nautica. It was not. I'll report back. I know our listeners right. are.
They're dying to know. Inquiry minds.
Yeah, they're on the edge of their seats wanting to know what kind of cologne my dad wears.
It could be Wings. Wings is an old school cologne. Very,
how about
very nice.
By the way, Kyle, this is a programming note. I've already talked
about
it.
We're going to keep talking cologne, Dave. We're going to keep talking cologne for the rest of the episode.
Okay. No, you don't know where I was going with this. I was all actually right, telling Bubba that we need to have his dad on the podcast because
oh, we
so
do.
Funny.
His dad's great.
He's hilarious. And we need to get him to do his mating calls or whatever that is, Bubba. I mean, you can imagine we're trying to get Alan Thomas on, and we'll throw him out there. At AT, he was sitting right behind us. We had a really good group of people that were having a really good time watching. It was kind of like the old school section, you know, like you have a former, the alum section was more fun than, the students weren't back yet. So I guess we were kind of like Will Ferrell in old school there. But anything like the group of guys, if you know that movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. And he, his dad, like, I thought it was one of the students sitting there, and I'm watching the game, and I'm hearing this, like, Tarzan kind of call, and all of a sudden I look, and it's Bubba's dad. I'm like, what in the world? What? I can't say the word I was want to say because we try to keep it family friendly, but I was like, what in the world? And I looked, and I started laughing, and it's just one of those things where I couldn't stop laughing because I kept hearing him make these mating calls or Tarzan or, what is it, Bubba? I don't know, you...
Yeah, they said WTH.
Exactly.
He wanted to say, what the fudge?
Yeah, exactly.
go ahead, Bubba. Let's hear your dad's.
Can you do it, Bubba?
Come on.
Uh-huh. I don't want to ruin it. We'll save it for his debut.
Okay, we'll get it.
I mean, if you do that mate call, Stacey's liable to come running.
Yeah.
He'll be surprised when she goes, Gary?
Yeah, no. If Stacy heard it, she would go running. She wouldn't come running. She would go running.
Does it?
But
Gary, I didn't know you were here. I didn't smell you coming up the driveway.
I could smell you from 100 yards away. But did y'all want to talk about some of the coaching changes? We obviously talked about
Ron Rivera and I guess Jason Garrett, but some of the college coaching changes, both head coach and coordinator.
Well, I want to get right to Mississippi State firing Joe Moorhead today, which I thought was ridiculous. He won what, 7 or 8 games in year one. This year he won 6.
Eight and 5, and then 6 and 7. So he was 14 and 12, and 7 and 9 in the SEC.
Right, and you know, it ain't like Mississippi State traditionally is a power. You know, they second worst program in the SEC traditionally behind Vandy. Well, maybe you could argue Kentucky, but you know, there was times where Dan Mullen, who's a fantastic coach, struggled at Mississippi State. And I remember one year, Bubba, they wanted to fire him. Do you remember they were talking about firing Dan Mullen? So it's not like it's Alabama. I think this had a lot to do with him not having an SEC background, him coming from a Big Ten school, being from up north. And I know Dan Mullen's from up north too, but he came from Florida. So I think this had more to do with them just not trusting him and not thinking he was the right fit. I don't believe any BS rumors about lack of control.
No, they don't care about that SEC. Are you kidding me? They don't care anything about that.
They won't. So whoever gets this job will be somebody with Southern ties. I'd be willing to put money on it right now.
Yeah, I think it may have been a convenient out for them.
Yep.
The problem is that there's a lot of SEC programs that are they're way better than they are.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't understand what makes Mississippi State think that, Dave. They've done nothing historically to show that. God knows. I mean, there was the 90s and the whole first part of the 2000s. They were dreadful. You guys remember?
They had some nice years under Jackie Sherrill, but
it wasn't consistent.
Right. I mean,
and then they had who was the black gentleman that was the head coach there? Sylvester Croom.
Sylvester Croom
was dreadful. I mean, they couldn't even score points some games.
But my point is, it's like because of the conference, you know, you take that job, and then you have just like the Arkansas job. Arkansas used to be. And when I was a kid, one of the best programs in the country, no question about it. But when you take the likes of Alabama, you have LSU, you have Georgia, I mean, and then Dan Mullen's at Florida. I mean, there's so many teams you can rattle off. And then you take that job, you're fighting an uphill battle.
Right. But
Missouri is another one.
Well, the money, you can't turn it down. I mean, like you mentioned Missouri, we talked about this before. He's making $700,000 a year, and I have to say, they offered him $3 million. You can't turn that down. So,
but what if you're not successful in Missouri?
Well, then you go get another job like App State, or you go become an offensive coordinator again and make probably what you were making at App State. I mean, he's proven he can win. I mean, he'll be able to land another job if he's not successful at Missouri. Look at Montgomery. He's the OC at Maryland now. It ain't like he's selling used cars.
Yeah. So, he's not making T-shirts?
Coach Mo, can you sell me a car?
Yeah, no, he couldn't, by the way. He'd sell it that too.
he said, Kyle from LaGrange.
You know how many cars? He'd sell 3 cars a year.
I was going to say the Silverado is the real deal.
That's right. That's what he would say. But with Mississippi State, you know, the money's going to be good, but what I'd be scared of Mississippi State is you look at the SEC, what do they want? Do they think they're going to win the friggin' SEC West?
They're going to go 12-0 every year.
If you look at it, you would think 8 wins would suffice at Mississippi State.
Exactly.
You would think, you know, 6-6 may be disappointing, or 6-7, but in year 2, maybe in year 3, he goes 8-4 again. Are you telling me that's not good enough at Mississippi State based on what? They've never gone 12-0, though, Dave. You keep saying they're going to go 12-0 every year.
I know. I'm saying they have fans.
Well, Arkansas has some success where they've done that back in the Southwest Conference days.
Right.
There's no reason Mississippi State fans should have those expectations.
Same thing with Tennessee. They were good back in the day.
You're right. Tennessee has something to point to. Mississippi State doesn't have anything to point to.
Say the same thing about South Carolina.
Well guys, yeah. Some of the names that have been thrown out there, names that you would expect to see, and Dave, you're talking about the state of Arkansas or the University of Arkansas, a guy that his dad was the head coach here at Arkansas, Lou Holtz. How about Skip Holtz? His name has been mentioned. You also have down at Louisiana. I'm drawing a blank. Raging Cajuns.
Yeah, Lafayette's head coach. Raging Cajuns head coach. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Yeah. We know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name either. Their head coach. He just got an extension in their bowl game.
Billy Napier.
Monday. Yeah, Billy Napier,
and then also, of course, Bill Clark's name was thrown out there from UAB, and then a guy that seems like he may have some interest with the fans and supporters there. He's a Mississippi State alum, Joe Judge. He's a special teams coordinator with the New England Patriots. His wife is a Mississippi State alum as well. I'm trying to remember if she played tennis or she. But she was an athlete, I want to say, as well there. And
go ahead and make the hire.
As far as his college experience, I know he spent 3 years as a special teams coordinator or special teams assistant in Alabama. Then the Patriots hired him away. That's pretty much been special teams that he's been involved with. The only other thing that he's worked with the Patriots here in the last year or two, he's because of the way they – changed how they did their special teams.
You mean they're not cheating anymore?
He's also coaching their receivers some. So
yeah, let me say this, Bubba. Hire him, Mississippi State. That's who I want you to hire. I want you to fire Joe Moorhead and hire some effing alum that's the special teams coordinator. His only job in college was the special teams coordinator also. Hire him as your head coach. You ignorant asses. Go ahead. Do it. Do it. I hope, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that's what they do. Please do it.
Hey, and I was going to say, not that this doesn't mean, or not that this means that it would be a good hire, but for what it's worth, the New York Giants did reach out to the New England Patriots to see or to seek permission to talk to him about their head coaching position.
And he may be a better pro coach than his college coach. I think it's tougher to be a college coach than his pro coach. I think Nick Saban, and people say, well, Saban wasn't successful in the NFL. His personality doesn't work in the NFL. I think it's tougher to be a college coach.
I agree.
Go ahead,
Bob. I was just going to say I agree with your point, though, as far as one of the things that you're probably thinking with that limited college experience and a lot of the factors, recruiting and other things that you deal with in college that are different in the pros, and that's something that it'd be interesting to see how that would go.
Do it. Hire him. I'm begging you, hire him. Hire him and see if you go 6-6 next year. I bet you don't.
Going into the toughest division in college football.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you want to put on your training wheels, you morons.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You have Auburn, you have Alabama, and you're looking at, my God, LSU is probably going to win the national championship. I mean, you look at those, that's what Skip Holtz used to always talk about. That's what makes coaches have sleepless nights, but you think about that division.
And Skip's name's coming up on that list, too. And I think Skip's a good coach, but Skip, to me, his biggest strength is his ability to put together a great staff. Well, everybody in the SEC has a great staff. He's not going to be able to put together a better staff in the SEC than Nick Saban or anybody else for that matter. So the advantage he has in a Conference USA is not – most other Conference USA coaches aren't going to be able to convince Bob Diaco to be their DC. They don't know Bob Diaco. Skip knows everybody. And people love working for Skip for whatever reason. And
he's a great guy.
Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know. But I
know that personally.
I just think him going to Mississippi State, I don't think it'll work. I don't think it's a good idea at all.
Hey, speaking of Skip, we haven't mentioned the two coordinators that he's losing. His defensive coordinator, did we say this?
No, we mentioned his name, but no, we didn't talk about him leaving.
Okay, Bob Diaco, of course, former UConn head coach and also defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, Cincinnati, a year or two at Nebraska. But anyway, Bob Diaco, left his job as the La Tech DC to head to West Lafayette to be the Boilermakers defensive coordinator under Jeff Brohm. So, and then also Skip lost his offensive coordinator, a name that we're very familiar with here and with Pirate Nation, Todd Fitch. He's headed to Vandy because congratulations to East Carolina football letter winner Joe Sloan. He obviously was a holder for us and also a backup quarterback. Joe Sloan is the new co-OC, new OC and quarterbacks coach. He had been co-OC and wide receivers coach with Todd Fitch.
Hey, by the way, guys, right. Very upset to hear about our, well, I would say friend, but I like him a lot, and definitely Pirate Nation loves him too. David Blackwell, what's going on there in Norfolk with Old Dominion? I thought they made a smart decision to keep him there, especially with recruiting purposes. When you,
I think that's why they kept him. I think they kept him on to finish up the recruiting class, and then their head coach decided to. And it could be a situation where their personalities just didn't mesh after he got there and started working with them.
We need to get Blackwell on. We'll find out.
Feel bad for him.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, well, maybe we can have him back as a Pirate. That would be great.
We don't have any evidence, Dave.
Pirate, Rick Smith.
And, Dave, another coordinator hire that I wanted to mention, I know you and I discussed this off the air, and I'm sure Kyle may have seen it as well. Obviously, Miami's offense was just miserable this year. Their defense was competitive for the most part, and I know they led the nation or were near the top of the nation in turnovers and forced right at 2 per game or something. But anyway, Rhett Lashley has been hired as Manny Diaz, new OC down there in Coral Gables.
From SMU?
Yep, SMU OC, and, of course, prior to that, UConn. And prior to UConn, he had those strong ties to Gus Malzahn and Auburn. And even prior to Auburn, I think he played for Malzahn back in Arkansas in the high school ranks.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know that that's the answer.
The thing is, they're another fan base that their expectations are not reasonable, especially when they do have the history, no question about it. But there's different eras of football, and the era that they're—I mean, the '80s, they were one of the best teams. And
the way they closed the season, man, I think they made a bad hire, hired Manny Diaz. To be honest with you, as a head coach, I think they did.
No, I know. I'm saying
I think they did Temple a favor.
Yeah, I really there's a lot of fan bases out there that I don't know. It's kind of like, Kyle, you and I love
you. Could
music.
Argue the East Carolina fan base can be that way, Bob or Dave. Look at you had a certain percentage of the fan base that wanted Ruffin gone. So you could argue. There's idiotic fan bases everywhere.
Like our good friend Cecil Staten said, the lieutenant, the lunatic fringe. I can't talk tonight.
Cecil Staten is a lunatic. He wears dresses. So.
Well, all right. We failed to mention we have a guest, by the way. Should we go to him?
He also wears dresses. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
No, please don't say that. He's a good friend
of
ours.
Steve and I is a great guy, and he looks like He-Man. He doesn't wear dresses.
Master of the universe and certainly master of recruiting. And master of everything East Carolina and Pirate Nation. Let's go to Stephen Igo and find out how he's doing. Well, we're very happy to have our next guest with all the recruiting going on for the latest class. We told him we'd give a break in the holidays. And right now, Bubba, we've got a very special guest.
Absolutely. If we don't have the opportunity to talk to guys within the program, nobody better to talk to outside of the program than Stephen Igo. Stephen, welcome into the show.
Yeah, guys, glad to be back, as always, and hope you guys had a good Christmas, good New Year's. Kind of flew by here, so I'm sure it flew by for you guys as well, but here we are.
Yeah, we are, and I don't know where to start, but I guess we could start talking about what you're known for, many things in recruiting. I want to get your thoughts starting out with the recruiting class with Coach Mike Houston. I thought that this class was incredible, and I obviously am a member of Hoist the Colors and been following because of you, Stephen. I've paid attention to recruiting even more over the last few years. I want to get your take on recruiting and the program, you think, in 2020.
Yeah, you know, I think it's I think it's a really good class. I think it's a step up over last year's class. I mean, you know, you're never going to come into signing day as somebody who covers recruiting and say, oh, you know, this is the average class or this is the below average class, you know, because we cover these guys, we get to know the coaches, we get to know the players. So, I mean, we're just not going to come out and say that. But I really do feel like this class, you know, is truly AAC caliber. And I felt like the 2019 class that Mo started and that Coach Houston finished with some key additions was AAC caliber as well. We saw that with a number of true freshmen playing right away. And I think this class is very similar. I think, you know, the biggest thing for me with ECU is you're never going to get, you know, the 4- and 5-star kids. You might get lucky and get one of those guys like a Mason Garcia every now and then. But the key is you got to get solid talent and then good character, as cliche as that sounds. You got to get good character kids who are going to stay into the program, who are going to buy in, who are going to develop. You got to retain, develop, and grow the program as a whole. So I really think this is the foundation for what Mike Houston has to build at ECU to get this program back to a successful level long-term to compete for championships. And, you know, if you stack 2 or 3 more of these classes on top of this one, I think the program will be back where it needs to be, and this is a major step in the right direction.
Stephen, where are you hearing on Garcia in terms of his academic eligibility?
He should get into school. From everything I've heard, ECU's got a plan to get him in school. And last I heard, the worst-case scenario would be he would get in as an academic redshirt, okay, a la Travion Freshwater, to where he wouldn't be able to play, but he'd be in the program year one. He, I believe, got all A's and B's in the fall. When I visited the school in the spring, he had a GPA around 2.0, so he had work to do. You got to have a 2.5 and a test score to get into school. And, you know, he made all A's and B's, so that number should improve. It should improve again with a good spring semester. And he's a smart kid. He just got behind on schoolwork due to some things in his home life. And if you talk to him, really smart kid. So it's not like he can't do it. And now that he's applying himself, I think he should be able to make it.
Are you surprised then that his academics are starting to turn around? That he did, or maybe there was a lot of P5 schools coming after him hard at the end, but are you surprised he held his commitment?
You know, I'm not surprised he held his commitment, because I feel like once he committed, he was pretty locked in. And, you know, if some of those schools would have came at him before his, you know, before these schools, or before really he started to blow up and before he committed to ECU, you know, I think he would have looked around. But once he committed to ECU, he was pretty locked in. Now, you know, Mike Houston did say at the signing day event that UCF and Nebraska were both trying to get him to visit and hold off on signing. He basically said, no, I'm good, it's time with ECU. So there were some schools coming in late. Syracuse was there the entire time as well. So it's not like schools weren't interested. And, you know, he camped at Alabama in June. You know, I still say if he would have had the grades then in the summer before most of these big schools had a quarterback commit, you know, he would have got offered from Georgia, Alabama, those type of schools. But at that time, he just didn't have the grades, and those schools don't really need to take the risk.
That's all interesting. Nebraska came in. That's two kids then that we went head-to-head with on Nebraska, lost one of them, got one of them. When's the last time East Carolina went head-to-head with Nebraska on anything?
Yeah, it's kind of – and a cornerback early in the recruiting class ended up committing to Nebraska out of Orlando, Florida, who ECU had in for a visit. So he had some weird crossover with Nebraska and ECU, really 3 or 4 kids in this class kind of overlapped.
It's interesting.
I know I go with I know you told me last year that this coming class is going to be – I know I read that too, but this coming year is going to be huge for North Carolina, and when it comes to high school football, and the talent level is going to be – tremendous this year, right?
Yeah, 2021 is probably the best class I've covered in recruiting. I've been covering recruiting since I joined 24/7 Sports in 2012, and just everybody I talked to has been in a lot longer than me say that this is probably the deepest and best class North Carolina has ever had. So, you know, it's a good and bad thing. Good because clearly, you know, the in-state kids, more times than not, you're going to have a good shot with them if you're ECU as an in-state program. But also, you look at many of the four stars and high caliber three stars in the 2021 class, and they already have offers from, you know, teams in the SEC, teams like Ohio State, Michigan. You know, they're already down here offering kids because the class is so stacked. I mean, I want to say there's 2 5-stars and 14 or 15 more 4-stars, and then, you know, 23 stars who are rated 85 and above, which is a high caliber 3-star. So, you know, there are going to be some recruiting dogfights for 2021. You know, in reality, I don't know how many of the top line guys ECU will be in the mix for, but the good news is you hope like a North Carolina and NC State and South Carolina kind of fill up regionally pretty early, and then the second tier kids in this class, you can get some high caliber players if you're East Carolina, and maybe still one or two of the top guys, and all of a sudden you have another really good recruiting class. So it certainly won't hurt. This past year was actually really weak for North Carolina in terms of talent, but it's certainly making up for it with the 2021 cycle.
Do you think Appalachian and Charlotte is having a much impact on East Carolina in recruiting in-state negatively or I don't think I could be a positive, but yeah, are they having any negative impact of them playing FBS ball now?
Honestly, no. I mean, you know, it's the pecking order, you know, since I've started covering it remains pretty much the same. You know, since I've covered it, you know, there's been maybe one kid or two kids that have legitimately picked App State or Charlotte over ECU out of probably 100 kids. So, I mean, it has very little effect. Now, you know, maybe Apps, if they sustain this success eventually over time, could potentially start beating out ECU for some recruits. But from what I've seen, guys that have offers from ECU, App, and Charlotte, if the offer from ECU is committable and they're legitimately interested in the prospect, you know, ECU is going to get it more times than not. You know, it's similar with, unfortunately, with ECU when they're going head-to-head with an ACC in-state school. It's very tough to beat out those programs just because of the recognition and notoriety they get in the state. I mean, really, outside of the Eastern North Carolina kids who we've seen, it's very hard to go into the western or central part of North Carolina and beat out a recruit who's got legitimate offers from North Carolina and NC State, all those schools. You know, I think Jaquan McMillan from Winston-Salem was the last one who really wasn't from Eastern North Carolina, who had some big-time offers and legitimately picked ECU. He was going to see what type of player he is. So, you know, I don't think Charlotte and Napa really affected ECU at all. You know, you see Liberty, ODU, those schools, like, always offer the guys that ECU's going after.
Yeah.
If you want them, they're going to get them.
Gotcha.
I want to ask you, Stephen, as far as shifting gears, because I know we've got we don't want to keep you past your time, busy man. As far as basketball is concerned, wow, what a performance over the last 5 games, and even the loss of Wichita yesterday, New Year's Day. I was telling you before we started the podcast, that first 2.5 minutes, I was like, wow, that's ECU basketball that we've known the last few years. Get down 9-0, and it's 17 minutes and 35 seconds left in the first half, and then all of a sudden they switch gears. I want to get your take on Coach Dooley and the Pirates, and it seems like there's a, I hate to use the word transformation, but it seems like their things are better than they were, say, right after Coppin State.
Yeah, you know, it's been a pretty dramatic turnaround. Guys are playing better. They're starting to get healthy. I still don't think they're healthy at the guard position with Tyree Jackson and Tremont Robinson as they want to be, but those guys are pushing through it. But, you know, they're starting to figure some things out. There's still a lot of issues with the team in terms of turnovers and kind of continuity and all that. But, you know, when you bring in so many new players, we knew it was going to take time. I don't think any of us realistically expected them to start as bad as they did. You know, losing to Coppin State, losing to Navy, App State, all those programs that realistically they should beat in terms of sheer talent. But when you throw in the injuries and the inconsistency with the lineups and so many new guys, you know, it was going to take time. And it's something that I kind of took for granted was, you know, usually you look at these JUCO kids who come to ECU or really anywhere, it takes about half a season for them to get into a rhythm to figure things out. You know, look back at Maurice Kemp's first year. You know, he really wasn't that good right away. And then the last year and a half, he was pretty incredible. And then you're taking 7 JUCO players in one class. You've only got 2 returning players. One of those was only fully bought in, Seth Ledé now being gone. But yeah, it's just so many moving parts, and I think they're finally starting to figure it out. Unfortunately, we know the schedule doesn't get any easier from here. But the Wichita State game, you know, I mean, that's as good of a team, as tough of an environment as you're going to see all year, and for them to play as well as they did is a definite step in the right direction. And I thought they still made a lot of mistakes and could have won the game with a play here or there. So, you know, they got to find a way to build on it. Maybe win two out of these next three home games. It won't be easy, but if they can go 2-2 to start conference, all of a sudden you're feeling pretty good about yourselves.
Absolutely.
No question about it.
Oh, wait a minute. Bubba's got something.
Yeah, I had a couple things. So one was just kind of just jokingly, because I know Steven commented on this on social media, ESPNU color analyst Robbie Hummel, who was the Purdue great, and I really think he did a good job as an analyst, minus the fact that he called us Eastern Carolina, what, at least three times?
Three times, man, right out the gate. It was, before I could even hit tweet on the as soon as I was hitting tweet on the first tweet about the Eastern Carolina reference, he hit it back-to-back. 2 and 3 times. And then I don't think he referenced ECU or East Carolina the rest of the game, maybe on purpose because his timeline was blown up. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, as an analyst, I thought he did fine. But, I mean, you get paid to cover the game.
That's ridiculous.
I just don't understand how it happens.
I go, people know our name. This is at least my theory on it. There's two theories. One is intentional, and that's for the Tar Heels that are working in media. The other are, they know we're East Carolina, but they are so used to saying Eastern for Eastern Michigan, Eastern Washington, or Southern or Northern. We're unique in that we are East Carolina, and that, you know, there's no other schools that use that term as a directional term. It's always earn at the end. And I think it's just habit. I think they know we're East Carolina. They're just not used to saying it. At least that's what I hope. Because if they don't know who we are by this point, no, I don't get that.
Yeah, and I think there's something to that for sure, because it is different. But it's still, man, it still boggles my mind. Like, I'm fine with one slip up, but if a guy's just out there rattling off Eastern Carolinas after Eastern Carolinas, it's pretty, you know, it's frustrating as an alum and as somebody who covers the team.
Yeah, no, I agree.
When you're covering another team, even when ECU's playing some crap school in baseball, you know, I make sure as a sports journalist to get the players' names right, to get the school's name right, to get the mascot right. It's just, it's what you do as your job. Like, you have to take pride in that stuff.
No question.
Absolutely.
About it. I was going to ask you, Steven, as far as the basketball team, can you talk about basketball recruiting things next year? Does that look good for the Pirates? I know with the coaching staff we have, there's no question how much they love recruiting, and they've done a nice job of what we have this year.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of an interesting situation they're in, because technically speaking, all the scholarships are full because you only had one free scholarship and you've got 12 returning players. But, you know, they're still out recruiting guys. You know, they've already got the scholarship full or filled in terms of a 7-footer and Derek C.C. Kwanzaa, who's playing at Hargrave Military Academy. High upside, 7-footer, who's got a lot of athleticism. But I'll be surprised if we don't see at least a change or two after the season with the roster. With Kwanzaa in the mix, you're projected to have 4 7-footers on the roster at one time next year. I don't know how realistic that really is. And then also, I think they're going to try and upgrade the wing position. They've offered a high-level JUCO wing, couple of high-level JUCO wings, and are looking for an upgrade there. So I think if they can be picky is a good thing. They can go after some elite talent, and if they get it, you know, they can work out the roster lately. I don't think you'll see a ton of guys signed in the spring, but I think you'll see maybe one or two. And then the 2021 class, they're targeting a lot of guys, and that's a very good in-state class, similar to football for basketball as well.
Bobby, you said you had something else.
Yeah, so I was gonna kind of shift gears to baseball, and it's hard to believe that we're right here, what, 6 weeks away from first pitch against William and Mary at Clark LePlayer, and obviously a lot was made of losing the likes of Bryant Packard, Spencer Brickhouse, Jake Washer, Jake Agnos, Turner Brown, et cetera. But the cupboard's far from bare. Cliff and staff have certainly stockpiled a lot of talent. And I know here recently we're projected to win the American, and then Jake Kuchmaner was preseason pitcher of the year, while Alec Burleson was also selected as preseason player of the year. So talk a little bit about what the Pirates are shaping up like this year. And then I know you have guys like Zach Agnos, excuse me, and some others who are going to make early contributions.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of new guys for baseball too, you know, similar to basketball, but not quite as many. But there is more newcomers than returners for the first time in a while in the Cliff Godwin era, which, you know, will take some adjustment as the season goes on. I think it'll be, you know, it's crucial that they have a couple of key guys, like a Burleson and Kuchmaner. You know, those are guys you can build around from a batting perspective and from a pitching perspective. You know you have a great culture in Cliff Godwin when he's running the helm. So, you know, raw talent, I think they'll be extremely talented. Again, I think they'll be the most talented team in the American. Are they going to repeat last year's 24 conference record? You know, probably not. I mean, that was a historical season with three top 10 picks and a lot of experience. So, you know, I think the realistic expectation is for this team to make a regional again. You know, to host a third year in a row with the losses they have in the lineup is going to be a challenge. I wouldn't put it past them, but, you know, I think just making a regional as a 2 seed or as a 3 seed and, you know, continuing to give yourself a shot to get to Omaha is the biggest thing. I think the way Cliff's recruiting, they're going to be at minimum a 2 seed, barring some major catastrophic injuries or inconsistency pretty much every year. That's just the level he's recruiting at. And they're going to have top 25 talent every year, and I don't think this year is any different.
Steve, I want to switch back to football real fast. What are we going to do? Are we going to sign any more high school kids? I don't even know what we got left in terms of what we could sign for February, and what about JUCOs and kids out of the transfer portal? We need to do something, in my opinion, to improve on the D-line and at linebacker.
Well, I asked Coach Houston at the signing day press conference if they were going to sign anybody else. He said they will sign at least a couple, but no more than 5. So you've got kind of a range there depending on what happens. My sense is, and I had an article up on Hoist the Colors this week, you know, they're definitely in 2 big recruiting battles with a receiver who was formerly committed, Jakari Caldwell out of South Carolina, who is now being recruited by Baylor, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia Tech, ECU. ECU still feels like they're right in it. They got a good relationship with the family. He's an elite talent they would still take. You know, receiver's not a major need, so if he doesn't end up signing, I expect that scholarship to be used towards the defensive side of the ball. They're also still looking at a JUCO offensive lineman, Emilio Moran, who is expected to take official visits in January. He's recently got offers from South Florida and Texas Tech, along with ECU and Florida International. So those are the 2 big names to watch. The transfer portal, they're looking for a defensive tackle, they're looking for a linebacker, and they're looking for a safety if they can find the right fit. So that's kind of what you're looking for now, football-wise.
Okay. Sounds good, Stephen. I know that we're up against the time with you. Can you tell everybody before we let you go how everybody can – I'm surprised they don't know if they're in Pirate Nation and they're not a member of Hoist the Colors. How can they join? You got any specials going on right now?
Yeah, you know, we just switched it back, I believe, to the $1 for your first month special.
Okay.
Or 30% off an annual subscription. So if you want to come to hoistthecolors.net, you know, recruiting, again, will pick up in mid-January when the coaches hit the road. And like you guys said, baseball, we're covering every game. We're providing a reaction, much like you guys are on the podcast. We're doing it online. And, you know, basketball season will continue to go. And spring football practice will be here before you know it as well, come March. So even though it is the off-season for football, it's one of our more busy times when baseball – spring football, basketball, and spring recruiting all overlap. It gets pretty hectic. So we'll be busy on Hoist the Colors as always. And if you want to join, check us out, hoistthecolors.net. And take advantage of that special offer.
And how can they follow you on social media?
At Stephen Igo on Twitter, Stephen with a PH, IGOE, all one word is the spelling there. And then HTC247 on Twitter for your latest updates. I usually try and provide most of the game updates on Hoist the Colors, the actual account there, and then I try and throw in some personal commentary on my own account. The best of both worlds, I guess.
All right, Stephen, as always, appreciate the visit, man, so much. Keep up the good work, and we'll see you at the next game.
All right, guys, enjoyed it, as always.
Great catching up with Stephen Igo, who recently bought a vehicle, so he's great. Bubba's going to buy a vehicle. Kyle, you bought like 10 vehicles. You have a whole fleet of vehicles now.
And I'm going to
2021.
Jeep Wrangler Unlimited we have. I could probably make a payment on a fleet of vehicles, trying to make the payment on that stupid thing.
Well, baby wants it, so what baby wants, baby gets.
Yeah, baby can take that thing and shove it over butt. I can't stand that. That payment on that Wrangler Unlimited is unreal. It's just, I don't even want to talk about it.
Okay, let's move on. We got more stuff. I'm going to put you in a good mood, Kyle. I got two more things definitely to talk about. And one, let's go, we talked about a few months ago, but it's the bowl season. And let's talk about the American tie-ins. It's a new year. We haven't had really a new year's show as far as what people, what your expectations, I guess, resolutions, if you will, personally or for the Pirates. But can we dream a little bit that this year is kind of like spring training for baseball? Everybody thinks their team is going to make it to the World Series or the playoffs. What about the Pirates? Do we go to a bowl this year? And if so, are you going to pick the bowls? We can talk about the bowl tie-ins with American.
Well, yeah, well, that was talked about today on several of the message boards and all different news outlets. We're talking about our bowl tie-ins for next year. I don't know. You know, I certainly think there's an opportunity to get bowl eligible next year. But our bowl ties, I don't know if you guys have them in front of you, but
I do.
Okay, I know I know you got the military against the ACC. You got the Fenway Park Bowl in Boston.
Right.
Just
before we go any further, that's what with the military and the Fenway Bowls. Like you said, those are both against the ACC and the military bowl, or I guess maybe those two are a couple of the guaranteed. Because, like we'll get to here in a minute, we have what's called just a bowl pool, of about eight games that we'll have four.
Those are guaranteed. Hawaii is guaranteed.
And the Hawaii is against either BYU or a Mountain West opponent.
Yeah. And then after that, I'm trying to think, what else is on the list?
The Hawaii and the Armed Forces, they're semi-annual basis.
Yeah, they rotate. We'll have one or the other.
Yeah, the Armed Forces, of course, is at PCU's Amon G. Carter Stadium or whatever they call it now, and there are several tie-ins there with who that opponent could be.
Yeah, so they rotate. And then after that, what is there?
In the bowl pool, you have the Birmingham Bowl, which is, of course, against either an SEC or ACC opponent. You have the Gasparilla Bowl down at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa against a Conference USA opponent. You have the Serve Pro First Responder Bowl in Dallas, and that is several teams that have tie-ins to that as well. You have the Cherubundi Boca Raton Bowl. That is against Conference USA or a Conference USA opponent or a MAC opponent. The Frisco Bowl. Down right outside of Dallas, you have an AAC team against either Mountain West or MAC opponent. The Auto Nation Cure Bowl down in Orlando against the Sun Belt. The Myrtle Beach Bowl against either Conference USA, MAC, or Sun Belt opponent. And then the New Mexico Bowl, which is a new tie-in against either the Conference USA or Mountain West team.
Now, here's something interesting about those bowl pool games, Bud. Bubba, that I do think may be incorrect. The Cure Bowl, unless it's been sold, is not an ESPN property, so
right.
That will not be part of that bowl pool.
Right, cause like you're saying, I know this year, I mean, it was on the CBS Sports Network.
Correct. So that shouldn't be part of the bowl pool, but the rest of them, I do know. Now, I guess ESPN could have bought it. I don't know. But the rest of them are part of the bowl pool. And it says we're going to be a part of them on a rotating basis. I don't think that's how it's going to work. I think we're going to be guaranteed a certain amount of spots. And the conference, excuse me, ESPN is basically, along with the bowls, are going to choose what I think the best matchups are. In other words, if, you know, the Myrtle Beach Bowl, for example, 1 year gets Charlotte and the next year their best pick will be Old Dominion, they may take Conference USA 2 years in a row.
Right. Yeah, I don't – I'm not 100%
what about
on that.
The,
but
I had a question about the – because I had members of the media we were talking last week about – what about the Bahamas Bowl?
I didn't see that on the list. Evidently, we have no ties to the Bahamas Bowl.
Yeah, I didn't see it on the list. I was just asking what.
Yeah, we're not.
So we're not affiliated with that at all.
No, it doesn't look like it.
Okay.
But we have plenty of bowls. We're going to have 7 bowl games, and you know, got several on the East Coast, and obviously very appealing with the new Fenway Park Bowl. And we got 2 guaranteed against the ACC. It's going to be a Power 5 opponent, I think, every year in the Armed Forces Bowl. And then the Birmingham Bowl is still going to be against the Power 5. And I would imagine most years we're still going to get the Birmingham Bowl. I'm sure there'll be some exceptions, but I think most years it'll be ours.
Yeah, Bubba had to, kind of like Elvis, Bubba had to leave the building. So, Kyle, you and I can talk. I'm excited for it. I really believe we're doing our New Year's show, a little bit of one. I really believe the Pirates make it back barely to a bowl. So I'm going you, me, and Bubba at the Cure Bowl in December in 2020. That's what I'm going. That's going to be my prediction. That's what I'm going with. I'm going to stand by that. And if we're wrong, if it's any other bowl, it's fine as long as it's a bowl.
Right. No, I hope we make it to a bowl. I'm gonna say we make it bowl eligible. We go 6-6, and I'm gonna say we make the quick drive down to Myrtle Beach.
Oh, that would be awesome!
And
take it.
and take on maybe a Georgia Southern in the Myrtle Beach Bowl.
That would be really cool. Al Cannon will be with us. We're gonna do he already told me we'd do it. He would do it, so I'm not putting him on the spot. Our engineer. So we're gonna do a live podcast from whatever bowl site, so we'll do that and save up our pennies. I told you, Kyle, we're going to have a great road trip and have a lot of fun, no doubt about it. Road trip, we can definitely do it, and there's a lot of the bowl tie-ins, which are great. They're not too far for Pirate Nation and for the 3 of us, or 4 of us, if you add AC in there, so that would be great. We got to win 6 games first, so... but it's nice to dream when it's early January and you're thinking about the bowl team.
Yeah, you know, it's possible next year. We talked about it some this year, but it really is possible next year. There was only one team that got bowl eligible this year with 6 wins that won on probation that didn't go to a bowl, and that was Toledo. So you add two or three more bowls are getting added next year with Boston, Myrtle Beach, and I believe there may be one more that we're just not affiliated with. So unless the bowl's going away that I don't know about, you could realistically see a 5-7 team or two going to bowls next year.
So I think that's reasonable for us.
Certainly you want to get to 6-6. But
yeah.
If we get that opportunity at 5-7, we'll take it. But, I think we can get there. I do. I think we're going to be dramatically improved next year. And,
yeah.
You know, with a tougher schedule, dramatically improved could mean 4 or 5 wins and being competitive in even more games, or it could mean – you win
7 wins,
six,
right?
6-6, 7-5. Who knows? 8-4. I mean, you know, you never know.
That's why you have to play the games, and hard to believe that, as Igo talked about, that you've got spring football coming up. By the way, fans, I want to remind you, get your season tickets for football, basketball. This is cool. You got football, basketball, and baseball season tickets all on
well,
the
you
same,
wouldn't get basketball
the same time.
Tickets at this point. I don't know if they have any mini plans or anything for basketball, but or just conference plan, but you wouldn't buy basketball season tickets now. But
I know they don't. They need to for football. I think they could do it this year.
Baseball
For
and football, yeah. are definitely on sale, and I've already got my football season tickets purchased.
All right,
sitting on go, ready for the Marshall game already. It's going to be a long season, as always is.
It's going to be great. Very excited about baseball. And speaking of baseball, Cliff Godwin, did you see that, Kyle? He actually was at the game in Wichita. Sitting there, he was at a timeout. There's a picture Bubba sent us, but a picture of there from ESPNU where they show Cliff Godwin rocking the beard. Looks fantastic. And he actually was a part of a huddle there. Great to see a real pirate like Cliff Godwin. And by the way, folks, speaking of baseball, Cliff Godwin, you have the baseball banquet coming up February 1st. Kyle's going to go with me. He don't know it yet. I'm kidding. I'm putting you on the spot. But I'd love for this year to actually be able to go to the baseball banquet. It's February the 1st. Get your tickets. Simply go to ecupirates.com, 1-800-ECU. That's where you can get all your tickets. Just go ahead and do everything and have a lot of fun. And by the way, Kyle, you got to come to a basketball game here pretty soon. There's the SMU game is coming up on Saturday, a week from tomorrow. We're recording this Friday night. So a 2 o'clock game, Kyle. Come on over, you and Jessica, and we can have a great time. And by the way, Kyle, you can actually sit on the bleachers now, so you don't have the complaints of the tight seating that you've been talking about. You don't have to worry about that. How about that?
Sounds tremendous, Dave.
All right. Well, I've got the hookup. I can get you some tickets, so just come over from LaGrange to Greenville. It's going to be fantastic. Afterwards, we can have a late lunch or early dinner, a lupper, as I like to call it.
Lupper, all right. How are you making words up?
Exactly. I've always called it lupper. I don't know if that's my word, lupper. But anyway, do what?
Nothing. Go ahead. Just continue.
All right. We've got a lot of great guests coming up on the Sports Objective. So, obviously, I'm not going to tell you all the ones because we're not only working on them, but also that's what it's a surprise. And sometimes it's a surprise to us as well. Speaking of guests, a thank you to Steven Igo. Appreciate him very much. Thank you for Bubba Rosenbaum for hanging in there for as long as he could. Obviously, I know he has family duties. And we don't want Stacey mad at us. She's mad at us a lot for the podcast. We love you, Stacey. And hopefully one day we can get her on the podcast. That would be fantastic. Do you have anything, Kyle, before we go?
No, man, that's it. Just good luck to the basketball team coming up. Nice effort against Wichita State, and hopefully get some league wins.
Next game is going to be Tuesday night. It'll be USF home on Tuesday night again. Go out and support the Pirates, no doubt about it. All right, for none other than Steven Igo from hoistthecolors.net, we have Bubba Rosenbaum, Kyle from McGrath Barber. I am Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.